case. Our first case this morning is 053514, United States v. Villarreal, Tamayo.
Oh. Oh, he would change the letter.
Oh. I'm sorry. Oh, for heaven's sakes.
Judge Rogner and I were just talking about the demise of the Green Bay Packers, so...
Sorry about that. 054572. How come you didn't faint? That's what I would have done. States versus Philippiak.
My name is Bridget Boyle. May I please the court? I represent the appellant in this matter. There is only one issue for review that is before this court, and that is whether or not the sentence of 24 months was unreasonable. There is absolutely no question that Ms. Philippiak violated the law, and she did some substantial harm to the victim in this matter. It is clear through the course of this matter that she totally and fully accepted responsibility. It is also clear that even though the guideline range was higher, I believe it was 33 months, the government moved for a downward departure on this matter, and she ultimately was given that by the district court.
So Ms. Boyle, it seems to me that accepting responsibility wasn't that hard for her, since she seems to have earned a great deal of money from the funds that she took, and not many people could pay back $2.5 million.
No,
and she did. And she had money left over, right?
Correct. And she included the potential interest that would have been.
It's 2.9. She paid
for. I believe it was. I think the government's review of the matter had it at about 2.7. So she paid a substantial chunk of money back. I think that
she's also going to have to say that money left. She was a very astute investor.
She was very good at what she did. And she was obviously very good at the money that she did take. So I recognize that there are some major issues as it relates to her conduct. It is clear from the records that Ms. Philippiak certainly accepted, prior to law enforcement getting involved, her conduct, and that is why she paid the money back. And I know the government was certainly fair in recommending a downward departure as it related to the payment of restitution.
There are some that might think this was a gift horse.
Yes, there are some. And I certainly know before this court before that sometimes you don't want to ask for certain things. But I think based upon the fact that Booker now exists and the district court must look at the factors in 18 U.S.C. 3553, I think that an individual can come forth before this court without insulting it to ask for this court to review whether or not the district court made a reasonable decision in its sentence.
If a sentence within the guideline range is presumptively reasonable,
yes,
what is the presumption that should follow to a sentence that's substantially below the minimum guideline range?
I don't know if I can answer that question because I know that it's clear through the rulings and holdings in this court that a district court does not have to apply the factors in 3553 in a checklist form. So I guess in the totality of the looking at Ms. Philippiak's case, I think because of the unique nature of it, because of the way the matter progressed through the district court, I think it puts it in a little bit of a different light than the majority of individuals who come before a district court who cause the government to indict them through the grand jury process, who cause the government to go after and seek assets.
What I'm getting at here is we have this presumption of reasonableness for a sentence that's within the guideline range. This is a sentence that's below,
right,
substantially below the lowest point of the guideline range. So what should there be some super-duper presumption of reasonableness to a sentence that's below the range like this?
I don't think I could ask this court to impose a super-duper kind of presumptive reasonableness type standard as it relates to matters that are, or sentences that are given that are below the guidelines. I don't know if that necessarily is fair to suggest that, I think each case is needs to be looked at on an individual basis.
I think that I think surely the implication of Judge Evans' question, though, is that the burden on you is super-duper hard if it's a below-the-guideline-range sentence. We tend to see those appeals from the government, not from the defendant.
And I don't think the government could appeal in this matter because of, and I know Mr. Johnson points out in his brief, in a footnote, that there is case law that exists based upon the government appealing sentences that are below the guidelines, but I think that also is cases that were pre-Booker. And I think that's where the majority of the appeals happen for, on behalf of the government. I think with the way the system works now, post-Booker, I think that an individual case has to be looked at. And I think in this case, based upon all the factors of Ms. Philippi X matter, based upon her educational, based upon her treatment needs, which are non-existent, there certainly is no issues of alcohol or drugs, that she would need some sort of correctional treatment setting. There are certainly the issues that the district court relied on, which is a focus in my submission, is that because of what the victim said, I think the district court felt that that company was harmed so greatly, and the individual that's referenced as the quote-unquote victim was harmed so greatly.
Well, of course, the president of the bank believes that Ms. Philippi was not completely truthful about the total amount of money.
Yes.
And of course it's very bad for the business reputation of the bank. And look at all the years that she was doing this.
I think that, and I believe that victims can come forth and indicate pretty much whatever they want to a court as to how the matter made them feel. However, I don't think the government can suggest or agree that they don't have all of the knowledge of what the money was stolen. I think Ms. Philippi X, prior to being investigated by law enforcement, indicated that it was about $2.6 million that she took, and that is consistent with the government's finding.
Ms. Brown, I just want to follow up to Judge Rovner's question. The victim here is not the bank. Am I correct?
The victim is Fred.
The fiduciary real estate development company.
Yes, that is correct. But the victim that's identified in the PSR that indicated his thoughts to the district court was pretty much a co-worker and a kind of a mentor towards Ms. Philippi X.
Right.
And I know he felt extremely heartbroken as it related to his reputation because of her conduct.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
Hello, my name is Bob Johnson. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney from Milwaukee, and I represent the United States. As has been discussed, the defendant's appealing a 24-month sentence, which he received for stealing over $2.5 million from his employer, the arguments are without merit. I thought it was interesting also, Ms. Boyle, when questioned, said, well, the government's recommendation, which was the 24 months, we recommended a sentence below the guideline range because of what we characterized as extraordinary acceptance of responsibility based on the repayment of the money. Ms. Boyle herself said, well, that recommendation was fair. Well, if that recommendation for 24 months was fair, it's hard to argue that the judge's decision to accept that recommendation and impose a sentence of 24 months was not fair, and in terms of the applicable legal standards, was not reasonable, was not related to 3553A, and of course it was not in violation of the guidelines, because as was already discussed, the sentencing guidelines must be considered. Sentences within the range are presumptively reasonable, and sentences within the applicable range will be reversed only on rare occasions.
Mr. Johnson, it seems to me that if the court had gone much lower, I mean, I guess her lawyer was asking for a sentence with no prison time at all. The government might have been appealing, saying that to, in a sense, have such a light penalty for such an enormous amount of theft would send the wrong message.
Yeah.
The government has taken appeals, certainly, in the post-Booker world when the sentence goes down to zero in prison.
It's possible that Ms. Boyle and I would still be here on the same day, but I'd be saying that the sentence, I appreciate the seriousness of the crime which occurred. And certainly if sentences within the guideline range are presumptively reasonable, a sentence 9 months below or 27% below the bottom of the applicable guideline range of 33 to 41 months is certainly reasonable. And as Ms. Boyle mentioned, my research did not reveal a single case decided by any court of appeals in the country on an appeal by the defendant which held that a sentence below the applicable guideline range was unreasonable. That was the question asked before, Judge Evans, by you about what sort of super-duper presumption might apply here. I don't think it's possible to suggest that somehow a sentence below the applicable guideline range is presumed in an irrebuttable way to be reasonable. I don't think you could ever make that ruling. On the other hand, as was pointed out, the lower the sentence gets below the applicable guideline range, the harder and harder it is for the defense to effectively rebut that presumption, and it certainly hasn't happened here.
Can I ask you a question? The thing that strikes me as a little bit odd about this case is the government's position that there was such extraordinary acceptance of responsibility juxtaposed to the comments made by Ms. Filipiak's co-worker, where he says, gee, we may never know how much was really stolen. And I see a tension there. Was that fact actually resolved somehow by the district court in a way that suggested that she, in fact, had come forward with virtually everything that there was?
Well, the record on that did not reflect, I think to be fair to Ms. Filipiak, it did not reflect that she was untruthful when confronted with allegations about what she might have done.
Even though Mr. Arp didn't think so, but he was just injured.
I think Mr. Arp's point was that Ms. Filipiak admitted what she was confronted with. In other words, they said, well, gee, our records indicate that, you know, you took this $30,000 here and you weren't entitled to that. What about that? And she would say, well, yeah, I did that. And then later they'd say, well, then there was this other $58,000 here. What about that? Well, yeah, I did that. So she admitted what she was confronted with. She admitted what they were able to discover when they started looking into this, but she didn't come forward to volunteer that she had done any of this. And so I think perhaps the most accurate way to characterize it is not that Ms. Filipiak necessarily lied when confronted, yet she did not forthrightly volunteer everything that she knew about the matter. And I think that there is a certain tension there, because there's a difference between being totally untruthful and forthrightly volunteering everything. She was somewhere in the middle, and the recommendation of a downward departure because she paid back this very high amount of money, at least in my experience, it's unprecedented for a defendant to pay back an amount like this prior to even being criminally charged. And so the recommendation...
If you've got it, you pay it.
She might be lucky enough to be able to pay it, as opposed to a lot of defendants you've dealt with who squandered the money. But the point is,
if she's got it, why does she take it?
She
still has a million.
The pre-sentence indicated that Ms. Filipiak was already in good financial shape prior to these thefts. And there was a suggestion made that part of her motivation for doing this was to show that she was smarter than her employer. I'm not a psychologist. I can't comment on that, but that's at least conceivable. In any event, the recommendation of a 24-month sentence, which was a downward departure, yet required her to serve a substantial sentence in prison, was meant to kind of balance the fact that she had admitted what she had done and repaid the money, but hadn't come forward to volunteer what she had done and to voluntarily pay the money. I'd just also like to mention that Judge Clavert very carefully considered the case. The record reflects that he listened carefully to about 20 pages of argument by defense counsel and the prosecution about various relevant factors. Rather than make a quick decision, he said he wanted to think about it overnight. He adjourned the case overnight. We reconvened the next day, and the next day Judge Clavert imposed the sentence and listed a number of factors which are discussed in the brief. I won't go through them now, all of which relate to considerations in 3553A. And I would suggest that this sentencing was handled in what could be characterized as a careful, almost textbook manner by Judge Clavert. The result was a reasonable sentence, which, as has been suggested, could even be characterized as a lenient sentence. The defendant's position is without any arguable merit based on applicable legal standards, and the sentence must be upheld. Unless you have some additional questions, that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Boyle?
Thank you. Very briefly, I think that one of the reasons why Ms. Fruthiak engaged in this conduct, and we tendered it somewhat to the court, is that I think she has some emotional issues. I think those are discussed in the PSR. And certainly I will also indicate to the court that I believe, based upon my experience with the Eastern District United States Attorney's Office, that when they make a recommendation outside the guidelines, a defense lawyer has to come in and say it's fair, because they don't normally do that, with the exception of people that substantially cooperate. So it is a fair recommendation, but that doesn't mean that the district court then imposed that sentence appropriately. And I know that, based upon all the factors in this case, that the court did at least consider for a very long period of time, with the idea that he took a break and came back the next day and convened and imposed a sentence. I do believe, though, based upon the submissions to this court, that I think the district court relied heavily on what the victim said as to his belief that she was not forthright, and they don't have total knowledge of what she did. And I think that the district court took that statement to heart when imposing the sentence, because I believe that Judge Clavert at least had in his mind, and the evidence from the transcript, that he thinks that there's more money out there that Ms. Fruthiak didn't come out with to the victim. So that is all I have, unless there's any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Boyle. Thanks to both Ms. Boyle and Mr. Johnson. The case will be taken under advisement. We are going to take a short break and be right back. Anything different, folks? Okay, good morning again. Now we're going to go on to